Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America Podcast. J.J. Cooper, John Manuel's back. Hey, everybody, John's back. And Vince, Laura are all here today, and we're going to talk the A's top 10. Because we're finishing up the American League West. We're rolling along. I think we knocked out the whole American League West. No, I'll take that back. We're gonna either do a special Saturday podcast, or next Monday will be the Astros. We haven't finished the Astros yet. Okay. But that'll wrap it up, and then we'll move right on to the National League East. So we're rolling along.
We're almost done online at baseballamerica.com. Yeah. The top 10s will finish next week, right, Vince?
Yeah, two more to go. We got the pods on Monday, a special MLK edition, and then Wednesday will be JJ and the Giants.
I think we're moving the Padres up a little bit just to salve the wound of Chargers fans, of the San Diego sports fan. It is amazing how the city of San Diego once had three sports teams, and now the one that's left is the Padres. I guess that's the one that got the stadium, and that's the one that's still around. And that kind of goes, Vince, to the Athletics. Because, baseball's most itinerant franchise, the only one that's moved twice that I can think of, is the A's, right?
Boston Braves.
They only moved once.
Boston Braves, Milwaukee Braves, Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, they did move three times. What am I thinking? Yeah, that's three. Yep. That's three cities. Day. Yep. Just like Oakland. I guess, that's kind of where you kind of have to start, Vince, is that the A's and the Rays are the – not only do they rhyme, but they also have – almost literally crappy stadium situations. Literally so in Oakland's case.
In the A's case.
with their sewage issues. But, I guess it feels like Oakland's organization is... there's strengths and weaknesses to every organization, but ultimately this organization seems like their stadium situation and trying to get a new park and the resulting lack of... the fact they just don't have a steady revenue stream, and now in the latest CBA, they're losing some of the revenue sharing money they were getting. It feels like until the stadium situation is settled, it's really hard for the A's to make a long-term plan, isn't it? I mean, even they have a new president, but just feels like this is always a franchise that has to be able to turn on a dime because they just don't know where the next paycheck's coming from, it almost feels like. That's kind of how they operate. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. And I think that, the good thing about that, though, is they've shown the ability to turn on a dime, right? So last year, they really maximized on Rich Hill and Josh Reddick by trading those guys for, three pitchers who are now ranked in the middle of their top 10. So I think you're absolutely right in saying that. But I think that the people who are in place can turn on a dime pretty well, we've seen. I guess they have the right team in place, or those guys have been in place long enough to recognize that they have to be able to pivot when they do.
And the thing is, I think they're almost hypersensitive to that because they pivoted too soon 2 years ago when they traded Josh Donaldson. I mean, that is ultimately a deal that's just...
They pivoted one way too far, which is they run for it, understandably, but Addison Russell for Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hamill is one of those that's going to burn for years and years to come. And then the next year they flip, and then after that they flip the other way too quickly, which was not just Josh Donaldson, but what was the Joey Wendell trade? It was Joey Wendell.
Didn't they also trade Yasmani Grandal? Did they have Yasmani Grandal? Or I'm thinking, I get him confused so often with,
Yonder Alonso.
But trading for Yonder Alonso. When they've made these deals, they haven't necessarily gotten a ton back. Although for Josh Donaldson, they did get their number one prospect in Franklin Barreto. I guess ultimately, Vince, the real question on Franklin Barreto is it seems like people are quite consistent in their evaluations of the fact that he will hit and that he will be a good hitter. Ultimately, gut feel after talking to people in the organization, where do you think he's going to wind up playing?
Yeah, it's either going to be third base or left field, I think. And the thing about that is it's one of the positions that but corner, infield, and outfield is kind of a place that they've got surplus now, right, with Ryan O'Neal, which dates me a lot, but
that's Ryan funny. You're the only one in the BA office who would make a Ryan O'Neal reference as well. Hashtag old guy joke of the day.
Exactly. And you know, they've got Renato Nunez, and they have Matt Olson, and Matt Chapman, of course, is the top guy that I should have mentioned. So, you know, it's a good problem to have in a way, but none of these guys are slam dunks by any means. Even Chapman, who's a good defender, I don't know how much he'll hit. He'll hit for power for sure. But Barreto was the original question. And, he's a third baseman. He doesn't profile there very well. He's a left fielder whose body is quickly thickening, and so you're not sure how well he'll move out there. And he, again, won't profile that well. He'll hit, but just not sure where he fits.
What about second base? Because that kind of the 5'9" kind of, you know, makes him kind of, when you think of, you know, that kind of second, I've heard, you know, second base and center field also in the past. Mm-hmm. The thickening kind of precludes center field probably in the long term.
Sounds like we're talking about a movie, right? Like Franco and Barreto, the thickening. Yeah. You know. But I'm with you though, JJ. Second base seems like, I mean, I guess do the A's officials not think he could handle second base, or do you think they just have enough other guys who are better options at second base?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, I think. I think they think he can handle it if he needs to, but they also, as you mentioned, have some options. Guys like Joey Wendell, who's a favorite of Bob Melvin, and then there's Max Schrock, who's a hitter first.
He's a favorite of John and JJ.
I'm a Correct. Big Schrock fan.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing, too, is they have Marcus Semien, who hit a bunch of home runs last year, who's currently their shortstop, who might move over when maybe Richie Martin is ready or, you know, something like that. Richie Martin ever hits enough.
And the weird thing for Barreto, and I think this will be reflected, like, in the industry, we'll see. I mean, this is kind of top 100 season, and Baseball America's working on our top 100 list, working out those negotiations right now with MLB Network, as a matter of fact. We'll do the top 50 show again, which is exciting. And for me, Franklin Barreto is a top 50 prospect because I think he is a second baseman ultimately, and I think he's going to hit. He's 20 years old. Mm-hmm. His track record for hitting goes back to like when he was 15. I do think there's going to be pop there. I'm okay with the thickening as a fellow thick guy. I mean, I think he'll handle his thickness better than
me. There are a lot of thick second basemen.
Yeah, I think he's going to be an offensive second baseman myself. I do think the fact that he didn't play great in the fall league is going to be reflected on a lot of other top hundreds. There are a lot of pretenders. There's only one real BA top 100, but I think you're going to see that elsewhere. But for me, he's a top 50 guy. But JJ, I don't remember if he was in your top 50 in the handbook or not.
Because again, not that he's not close to it, but it just from the idea. From the idea that it's like, okay, his bat is going to have to be really good. I mean, second base now, we've talked about it. Mm-hmm. We still don't know if second base the last 2 years is a fluke or not. Right. But the reality of it is that second base nowadays is a more offensive position than left field. Which is crazy. But the expectations on it are much higher than they used to be. You can be a 270 hitter with 15 homers, and it's like, yeah, you're an average second baseman nowadays, which is crazy.
I think Barreto's a little bit better hitter than that, but you know, I think ultimately the power is kind of a question of just how much impact he's going to have. Let's stick with that kind of up the middle theme, Vince, because it does seem like as you go through the top 30, there's an awful lot of up the middle guys, and I will say. You know, as we debated the list, and obviously you and I debated this list a lot, and there's a lot of different ways you could rank these guys, and that's why we have the BA grades, because it does kind of help you give a good idea of ceiling versus certainty with a lot of these players. Yeah, we ranked Chad Pinder fairly aggressively, really based more on certainty of role, and that he's going to be a big leaguer of some kind. I think Chad Pinder, Richie Martin, and Yairo Munoz, those are guys that feels like internally, we were pretty split on. I assume that this is how you think the A's kind of line these guys up in terms of going Pinder, then Martin, and then Munoz. But or was there something that you liked better about Pinder to rank him at the top of those three guys, even though we ended up ranking him as the lowest ceiling of those three guys?
Right. Yeah. No. I think it was what I heard from within the organization. I mean, they're very happy with Pinder's play in terms of his fundamental ability. They like that he, although doesn't have the highest ceiling of those guys, that he does the job that he's supposed to do. And I think the opposite of that is Yairo Munoz, who several people in the organization felt was a little too flashy for his own good. I mean, there's clearly a high ceiling there with him, but I think one person I spoke to said it's a matter of trying to like beat the flashiness out of him, if you will. Like at some point, he's going to have to learn not to make plays that difficult.
He's carried that for years. When I was doing Midwest League calls, I mean, like basically, I think a couple of opposing managers call it the Yairo Munoz experience, which was you knew when Yairo Munoz was on the field for good and bad.
Right. That's absolutely something that's carried with him. It's a stubbornness, I think, in regard to making things more difficult than he needs to make them. And that, hopefully he grows out of that. But at this point, that's not been the case.
Yeah, I think the one way you can help a player grow out of that is not promote him to Double A when he's not ready. And that's the startling thing about the A's with Yairo Munoz. To me, is if you think you need to beat the flash out of him, then send him back to high A after 1.5 decent months there. I mean, I don't get it. Why do you send a 21-year-old to Double A when you're going to move him around anyway, so it's not like Richie Martin should have been in his way. And honestly, Richie Martin probably could have handled being in low A to start the year. So
The next time that Richie Martin has a dominant season will be the first time.
The first time, yeah. No, I mean, he had some good capes. He had some good capes. But that's about it. I mean, like, I'm curious, did that come up at all, Vince, because, I mean, it's not only just that they moved Yairo Munoz to Double A, but he had a foot injury in spring training. That really struck me as odd, an odd handling of this player who, they've liked for a long time. I've talked to club officials about him before, and they've always seemed to like Yairo Munoz. And then he went out. They even sent him to the Fall League this year. Well, ultimately, they put him almost exclusively at third base there. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean he's a third baseman going forward. It certainly looks like he's not a shortstop for them going forward.
And it's a waste of his.
Right.
I understand Matt Chapman may stand in the way of him doing it, but it is a waste of his arm to put him in second.
Yeah, I mean,
I
can't figure out how they. I can't figure out the way they've used Yairo Munoz. It sounds like you don't quite know that one either, and I don't even know if they know it.
Yeah, it's difficult to figure that out because, I mean, you would think a punitive action would be needed at some point if you're saying, look, we're frustrated with the development of this player. And yet, as you said, they didn't follow through on that kind of plan. So, it's a difficult one to figure out because I was surprised how negative, not negative, but I guess how, maybe negative is right, how negative they were about his stubbornness or how negative they were about his overall attitude, but yet the tools are there. And so it's hard for them to, be completely down on him as a player.
They've got a lot of sorting out to do. I mean, we saw this, we saw this with their Double-A club last year. I mean, where it was, they moved a lot of guys around because they have a lot of guys who you don't know where the best fit for them is long-term. And so, Matt Chapman played shortstop and third base. Yairo Munoz played second base, shortstop, third base. Franklin Barreto, shortstop, second base. Chap Hinder at a level above, shortstop, second base. Even
and Ryan Healy, they moved from Healy first back to third.
First and third.
Right.
They got a lot of guys who, if you're looking on the positive, they have versatility. If you're looking on the negative, besides Matt Chapman, if you put Matt Chapman at third base, you are getting a well above average defender.
Yeah, a guy could be a 7 defender at third base in the big leagues. I really think he can.
And who could end up having maybe the best arm, infield arm in the majors.
I really hope that I'm just so encouraged for Matt Chapman's sake that we still have those reports. Some guys have great arms and they kind of let it lapse. I mean, if you don't use it, you lose it. It sounds like he really maintains his arm care, which is fun and another endearing quality about him. I do love that a lot of the comps for him are like, he's like Matt Dominguez, but a better version of him. It's like, man, that's, I don't want to start with that. But I've heard that comparison for him for a couple of years. I guess the thing is, Vince, no one really is convinced or convicted that Matt Chapman's ever going to be a really high average hitter, right? It's power over hit, right?
Oh, no, yeah, he's definitely power over hit. I mean, I think Greg Nettles is a decent comp to him, like in terms of a guy who will hit 240 or 230 but will still impact the ball enough to you know, make it worthwhile.
Love the old Yankee comp.
Another dated reference. But a guy who was, you know, a really good fielder. He's got a better arm than Nettles ever did. Nettles always used to loop the ball over to first. But that's the kind of guy I see him as, like a classic, you know, when I was growing up, a classic third base type was a guy who was a power over hit defender. So
I thought you were going to drop a Ken Boyer reference on us there for a second, or Clint Boyer. Growing up, when you're talking about growing up. Sorry, old guy jumped number two of the day. So. You are a good sport about my old guy jokes. It says the guy who just turned 45. We're talking Oakland A's prospect with Vince Lara. And, you know, the other position player in there, Vince, other kind of up the middle guys were Richie and, you know, Richie Martin, like we talked about. And then those second basemen, and we're not even getting to Yordan Vargas, but those second basemen we mentioned, Wendell and Schrock. It does seem like, you know, Wendell has a shot to really be. I guess he's going to compete for that big league second base job. And, I mean, honestly, Jed Lowry is so old that I was the college baseball beat writer here when Jed Lowry was in college. So, you know, he's getting long in said tooth. I mean, I guess Joe Wendell's really got a shot that big league second base job. And what's your kind of – him? He and Richie Martin, they're polar opposites. Richie Martin is an athlete, good defender. You know, the bat needs some time, and yet they pushed him very quickly last year. Whereas Wendell seems like he needs to be in the big leagues already, but they've kind of taken their time with him. What's your kind of gut feel on ETAs for those two guys, especially Martin? What's their plan for Richie Martin in 2017?
Yeah, I think they'll you know, pump the brakes a little with Richie and try to get him to where he's comfortable, and you know, I mean, they're still confident that the bat will come around because of the bat speed and because of his actions at bat. And I think, you know, I think he'll probably begin the year at double A again after a nice little stint there, you know, last year. I think Joey Wendell has a real shot of getting the starting job because I think they were really impressed with how he improved defensively. His hands are pretty good. He turned the double play okay. Bob Melvin already loves him, loves his, you know, great makeup kid, and he can really hit. And those are, you know, the guys that the A's really like are guys that can move around a little bit, who are bat first guys mostly, and who are, you know, solid makeup guys. And I think that for that reason, he'll get a shot to sort of be that bridge, I think, because I think ultimately you're right. Barreto probably is a second baseman, and so he'll probably end up there. But Wendell, let's say Wendell's a second baseman for 2017, and then, you know, Barreto comes in 2018 and takes that job, and then they can still move Wendell around. You know, there's always the rush to have like Ben Zobrist 2.0, and the A's have a bunch of guys who can fit that mold. It looks like
I'm making my prediction, and I'm thinking that Max Schrock, who admittedly faces questions about how well he can play second, but I think Max Schrock ends up being the second baseman of the A's. I think that he's a better hitter than either of those other two guys. And he'll, as you said, it's an offensive position. Barreto may be the obstacle for him in the long term, you know, but Barreto or Schrock. But I kind of feel like, and maybe this is unfair, but I just don't know if Joey Wendell, like, okay, I feel like he's the kind of guy, and I think the BA grade that he'll have in the handbook reflects this. He's the kind of guy who, if he's your second baseman, you're okay, but you're looking to replace him. And that's kind of what I'm interested to see, is that can Joey Wendell be more than that? Can he be more than the guy where you go, yeah, we're okay, but we're looking to move, you know, looking to improve?
Yeah. I think that's going to be the role he carries, the yoke he carries in 2017 is, he's going to be the second baseman for now, you know, until the next wave, you know, comes through. And that would likely be Franklin Barreto at second base.
See, I think the interim guy is going to be Chad Pinder. That's the thing, because I think Pinder's the interim guy, not Wendell. So I'm not as high on Wendell as Bob Melvin is, apparently. I don't buy a guy who's supposed to be a hit tool, is supposed to be his best tool, and he strikes out 100 more times than he walks and doesn't hit for power. I mean, I just don't see it. So just for me personally, Nothing personal. I ranked Joey Wendell long ago in the Coastal Plain League, along with Joe Sclafani. They were two peas in a pod for me in that league, and I thought they were both like good AAA guys who might get a little big league time. Yeah. And that was true for Sclafani. I don't even know if he's in baseball anymore. I saw him in AAA with the Astros a couple years ago. But for me, Joe Wendell is a 4A joker, whereas Max Schrock led the minor leagues in hits this year. He had some he had some injury issues at South Carolina. Ultimately, I don't know why South Carolina's the Grayson Griners and the Joey Pancakes and the Tanner Englishes and the Max Schrocks of the world didn't work out and didn't hit at South Carolina the way we thought they would. I think part of it was all of college baseball had a lot of guys in that time span who grew up using Beezer bats and got BB cores in their hands and had gotten in some bad habits. I think a lot of college baseball coaches have gotten in some bad habits when it came to coaching hitting. And, you know, Max Schrock has, it's a small, short sample, but one full season of the minor leagues, more hits than anybody else. I'm going to buy in on that guy. So for me, that's I prefer him to, in a significant way, to Wendell. I think Wendell is just a guy everybody's got. But, you know, Schrock finished up in Double A.
Yeah.
I think Schrock, you know, Schrock finished up in Double A in his first full season playing with that Texas League champion Midland Rockhounds team, playing second base next to Richie Martin. Both guys played 3 years in the SEC, both in their first full year in pro ball. Martin hit a little better hit a little bit better in the Texas League playoffs, but overall, I think Max Schrock hit circles around him. So, personal bet board, I'm putting who's more likely to be a big league regular? For me, it's Max Schrock. So, I just think it's crazy that the A's in the year of the SEC shortstop wound up with the two guys I would least like out of the SEC shortstop, which are Richie Martin and then Mikey White, who really had a very ordinary season.
That leads to the next question to me is okay, when we're talking about the 2017 A's, you look at this division, when we have the Rangers and Astros, who basically, last couple of years, they've been fighting it out. You have the Angels, who, until the day that Mike Trout's contract is up or Mike Trout is traded, are in it, are going for it every year because you can't waste Mike Trout. You have the Mariners, who have made, last I checked, I believe the number was 4,722 moves this year in the offseason, which clearly all of them are aimed at, hey, we're contending as well. Where does that – we've got a 69-win A's team, and it's really hard to say what the A's have done that says, okay, this team's going to be significantly better in 2017 than they were in 16. Is this team really in a true rebuild, or are they more in an attempt to kind of restock while attempting to contend? Where do you think they are?
I think it's a transition. We'll put it that way. I think so. I noticed the Yankees have avoided using the word rebuild. They've used transition, and I think that's kind of where the A's are too. I think they're transitioning into the next phase, which is, okay, Matt Chapman gets here and Matt Olson gets here and Franklin Barreto gets here, and then we've got all these young arms that we really like. But, you know, JJ, long term, the Astros and Rangers are so solidly placed, and then you got a Mariners team that it's gonna, I guess DePoto's gonna go for it all the time. And I don't know where that leaves the A's. It leaves them in the second, you know, it leaves them being relegated, if you will, if we were talking soccer. You know, I mean, they'd get knocked down. You know, they have some interesting players coming along, but unless the pitching is a lot better than we all think it is, the three of us think it is, then I don't see how they compete unless there's a real, you know, there's a real step-up year for one of those guys. I mean, their pitchers are interesting, but there are no, you know, there's no star in there. They're all guys who we think could be relievers instead of starters. You know, as much as we, I think I love Frankie Montes, what he brings. I get that they want to have him be a starting pitcher, but I don't know how that's going to go long-term. Pardon me, long-term.
That's a good segue into this team's pitching kind of prospects, because I think if you like the A system, you like it because of their pitching prospects. You know, the big league rotation, you know, has, to me, two potential frontline guys in Sonny Gray and Shamania. It has right. Steady as she goes. Best $5,000 draft pick of the last 10 years, Kendall Graveman. Love Kendall Graveman.
Right.
Shout out to Victoria Long, his girlfriend, now wife, who I sat next to on the way to spring training last year. So that's 2 years ago, actually. So Kendall was great to me and my son when he was charting one day. So I've been a big Kendall Graveman fan ever since. So and he's really had a nice little career. One of the better careers of any of the college pitchers drafted in 2013. But the best college pitcher drafted in 2013 has been Sean Manaea. And so I like the start of the A's rotation. The other guys they have kind of penciled in for 2017 right now are Daniel Mengden, who was, again, part of that in 2013. He was part of that college national team where so many of those guys have gone on to big league success, whether it was Carlos Rodon or Trey Turner or Alex Bregman or Kyle Schwarber, Michael Conforto, yada, 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 a lot of guys. Mengden was in the bullpen for that team. And then there's the opportunity. And there's opportunity for Andrew Triggs, who I think we snuck into the last year's book at the back of the Orioles top 30. Guy who we once ranked in the top 100 college prospects when he was at USC. He's dropped his arm slot since then. He's kind of remade himself. I've always had a soft spot for Andrew Triggs. He's like a really smart, engaged guy who's maximized his ability kind of through his knowledge of pitching. But then it's the prospects to me, Vince. So Jarrell Cotton, Frankie Montas, those guys have an opportunity to be in the big league rotation in 2017, it feels like. And then there's the top-ranked pitcher in the system, A.J. Puck. I mean, Cotton versus Montas. That's a real. You kind of tipped your hand there already. You kind of feel like Montas' place is more in the bullpen. I can see either of these guys, Cotton or Montas, having success, either as starters or relievers. I kind of always thought that Jarrell Cotton was going to be a potential stud closer because of the changeup. When we started hearing about how good the changeup was last year, and there see a lot of fastball changeup closers. What did he do so much better in 2016 to allow him to lead the PCL in strikeout rate for starters and kind of position himself as a 2017 rotation option?
Yeah, I think that the cutter was the big thing that stepped up for him in 2016. You know, that obviously the changeup is what everyone talks about, but I think that the main thing for him beyond the cutter is trusting his stuff a lot too. You know, I think once the A's realized what they had in him and the fact that the cutter could give a different look, he was able to really dominate, really put it together. You saw in his five-start audition there at the end, just how tough that changeup is to hit. He's not a big guy, so I totally get the concerns about him being a starting pitcher. But John, you know better than anybody, and JJ, you know as well. Like they'll continue to develop him as a starter as long as possible until that decision has to be made. You know, and if it's that if this spring that they decide, okay, maybe Jarrell's better off in the bullpen, then that's what'll happen. But I think what they saw from him last year makes them really believe, okay, I think this guy can start for us. I mean, cutter changeup, fastball guy, two-seamer, different look with that. I think they feel like they've got a back-end guy in him.
I do think that the development of the cutter is important for that, too, because one of my big reasons I've always thought he'd probably end up in the pen is this is a John, like, fave for years. Fastball changeup righties. It's something where it's a hard... That is a hard profile to be as a starter. But adding that cutter, the improvement of that cutter, that little wrinkle that keeps it from just being fastballs and something that looks like a fastball. You ideally, you'd want that slider, to be a little better to be a starter.
Yep.
But at least that, to me, that makes it a more plausible. And again, you compare him to a guy like Frankie Montas. With Montas, it's we have a pretty long track record now that he has struggled to make it through a full season. That makes it hard to kind of go from that to feel comfortable that this is a guy who's going to be able to make 30 plus starts down the road. We were talking Mariners recently.
No doubt.
He certainly has the body for it.
Right.
I mean, he's a big guy and he's got some athleticism. It's not like a
definitely.
It's not like Jonathan Broxton body.
You know? Right. But we were talking Mariners recently, doing a Mariners podcast, and we're talking about James Paxton. And at this point with James Paxton, if you get 20, if you wanted Montas to be a starter and you said, if we get 20 starts out of him and he's healthy at the end of the year, we feel like, you know, we're in great shape with it. I can see that as maybe a plausible possibility. But it's really hard to just, again, James Paxton the same way.
Yeah.
You don't pencil in James Paxton start of the year and say, we're getting 32 starts this year.
Right.
You say, you know, there's going to be a stint on the DL, maybe two, but we hope that when he's healthy, we'll get really good stuff. And we just know we'll have some backup plans.
Yeah, that's why I prefer Cotton to Montas. I know it's a bold move, Cotton, but to me, you know, Montas is 24, age 24 season coming up, and he's pitched over 100 innings once. And you just don't fall into 100 innings. I also go to the Matt Eddy theorem here on Frankie Montas of there's a reason why teams keep trading this guy. It's not just that teams keep trading for him. That is a plus. But he was signed by the Red Sox. Red Sox to White Sox, White Sox to Dodgers, now Dodgers to A's. At some point, somebody has to really want to hold on to this guy. What is there about this guy that causes three teams to trade him? It's not always, oh, we want something else. And it's like that's that's one of the reasons why Matt always has a little hesitancy on Josh Hader, which I understand. He's been, you got to get a 19th round pick, you know, like Baltimore did. You think they want to, like, oh, man, what a find. But maybe they thought, oh, 19th round pick, he's disposable. We'll trade him for Bud Norris. But then Houston had him, and Houston had him good. And then to give him up for Carlos Gomez? You know, that makes you – so I understand why Matt's like, maybe there's less to Josh Hader than meets the eye. I happen to believe in Josh Hader, but that's doubt in my head. But with Frankie Montas, it's even one more trade. And he's right-handed, he throws the snot out of it. I mean, what are we missing? So that's why I'm always hesitant to endorse Frankie Montas.
Yeah, I think the walk rate, I think, is concerning. You know, John, I think that the A's are for sure, I mean, you know, they're obviously going to tell me and anybody else, we like Frankie as a starter because that makes the most sense, right? They want his value to be as high as it can be. But, you know, the walk rate is for sure a concern.
3.8 per nine over his – and he's been a starter. It's not like he's doing that out of the bullpen. 86 of his 106 outings in the minor as a professional, you know, major and minor leagues have been as a starter. So he's usually starting, and he's usually not throwing enough strikes. So,
I mean the most effective he was in the AFL this fall. He was actually piggybacking with Dylan Covey, who got picked by the White Sox in the Rule 5, and he was just throwing the hell out of the ball. You know, he. He and Covey combined for that no-hitter along with Drew Steckenrider of the Marlins.
Right.
So, anybody who saw that outing, who saw those outings said, yeah, this guy's a reliever, you know.
And that's the thing. And even there, even though he had an 0.50 ERA, 0.53 ERA in the fall league, he still walked 8 in 17 innings. That's just not good enough.
He struck out only 9, I believe, if the stats are right. So there's a lack of deception there. Maybe there's, you know, whatever it is, very straight fastball. But he's interesting. I think he's going to be a bullpen guy ultimately. But you know how teams will always tell you, we're going to start him until it manifests itself, and we have to make that change.
So then the other starting pitchers who have this kind of upside are, again, AJ Puck. We can lump in their 2016 draft guys in a minute, but the holdovers, not holdovers. Grant Holmes is new to the organization. That's a guy that I was very high on coming out of the draft. He has not had the pro career I kind of hoped that he would have. And then Daniel Gossett, who kind of went the other direction this year, in a good direction, finished up in AAA, really had a dynamite year. And then, you know, they have some kind of older holdovers, Raul Alcantara, Dylan Overton, owner of the worst big league debut of all time.
Whoa.
Heath Philmeyer, who had a nice year for them this year, kind of took a big step forward. Out of those other starting pitchers, Vince, and some of them acquired in trades, other non-2016 draft guys, kind of who's your gut feel guys? Who are the guys that you kind of like, and who are the guys who you think, like, who you ranked with maybe less? Is there one guy you really liked better than the way you ranked him? Is there a guy that you liked less than you ranked him? You know, if you understand that
question. Yeah, I think, right. I think I liked Philmeyer higher, better than I ranked him, just because of how positive all the feedback was on Heath Fehlmeyer. I went in with a complete blank slate on him, and I just was impressed with how people kept bringing him up to me. You know, like, hey, there's a guy you forget, or, you know, this is a guy I want to make sure to mention. You know, and it's a guy who, because he has such a fresh arm, as it seems like to say, as a position player for most of his career, I think that it'll be interesting to see what he is this year, you know, and whether he stays as a starting pitcher. I think they like his clean delivery, so that means they see starter possibility with him. Athletic guy, obviously, as a former position player. So I really like Fehlmeyer. You know, Gossett is a guy who, talking about the other direction and guys I rank high who I'm just unsure about, I know how good he was this year, but man, that came out of nowhere. I mean, I think even the A's had to be stunned by how much better he was this year. And one of the things that they brought up to me was, man, check that guy's soft contact rate. Like, he just killed, like, nobody was hitting the ball off of him at all. And how much better, you know, the cutter was. You know, they had worked with him. One of the things Gil Patterson tries to work with on guys is, like, you know, if the slider doesn't work, well, maybe we need a cutter or a curveball. Let's go with a different breaking pitch.
Yeah, no, that is Bill. Yeah, as Gil Patterson, like, that's what he's most known for, isn't it? I mean, like,
absolutely.
That's his number one. I mean, I guess, yeah, that's it. I was about to confuse him with Fritz Patterson. So he doesn't want to be confused with Fritz Patterson to make another old Yankee joke. But, yeah, I mean, that is what he is most known for sure.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so I think the cutter is what put Gossett over the hump. And but, you know, I don't know what to expect. He was so good last year. And, again, that was sort of out of nowhere. I mean, you know, looking at how much his walk rate improved, his strikeout rate was in line. And but who knows? I mean, I don't know what they have there. I mean, he's a second-round pick. He's not a nobody. He's not a sleeper by any means. But be interesting to see what Daniel will be this year and how he fares.
Yeah, I mean, he was a dude at Clemson for sure.
Absolutely.
And a second-round pick, like you said. So it's not like he made such significant improvement in his strike throwing ability because he didn't. And you know, he walked a decent amount in college. He just didn't give him a lot of hits. In college, this year it was kind of everything. He didn't give up a lot of hits. He didn't give up a lot of home runs. He didn't give up a lot of walks. He really had a really nice year all the way around and finished up in AAA and throwing well in the playoffs there as well. Last but not least, I guess this year's draft class. You know, we didn't even talk about catchers. I mean, we ranked Bruce Maxwell in their top 10. We almost ranked Sean Murphy in their top 10. We kind of were all over the place.
Yes.
But this year's draft class, obviously, it's Sean Murphy, the catcher at Wright State, and then these three high-caliber college pitchers they drafted in Logan Shore, Dalton Jeffries, and A.J. Puck. What was your sense of how those guys debuted? What did those guys show after they signed, or did they really get to show too much because all those guys really pitched a lot in their junior seasons, or as much as they could health, considering their health, and Dalton Jeffries?
Yeah, I think with Puck, I was surprised at how not down, but I guess how they viewed Puck's slider. I mean, what I consistently heard was it wasn't what we thought it would be. You know, it lacked bite. The rep far exceeded what we saw. You know, and the concerns about what AJ Puck is, if he's a starter going forward. I was really surprised, especially when you look at his stats. I mean, he did strike out 11 per nine. I mean, he didn't give up any home runs. You know, it's a small sample size as always. But, I think, I was surprised to hear what they thought, that his slider really lacked what they had expected.
So they weren't too enthused by his debut. I mean, I'll tell you what, they made it easy for him because, JJ, how often does the top college pitcher in the draft debut in the New York Penn League? I mean, that's where you'd think they could, but usually top college guy moves a lot quicker.
No, debut there is one thing to me. That's, to me, not that unusual.
But stay there for 30
years. Right. Like, I mean, like, Chris, again, that's the thing that's a little unusual is the Chris Bryant and all, like, even position player-wise, there's often this, like, hey, you're going to start – sometimes it's you're going to start the GCL, the AZL.
Hey, I think Chris Bryant's first day in the AZL – was it the AZL, the New York, or the Northwest League was over five strikeouts, three errors. I mean, it was
– right off.
It was exactly – yeah, it was like – good thing he wasn't Shaq Thompson. Good thing nobody tweeted incessantly about that.
But 10 starts, and again, obviously on very short, you know, innings limits, you know, but 10 starts in the New York Penn League. Now, that is a little unusual.
Here's a comp. Chris Sale. Here's a big, tall, fits into one of A.J. Puck's pant legs.
And they're both
tall left-handers.
Yeah, and it's the White Sox who basically, like, they debut their 18-year-olds in, you know, in the Sally League. But, you know.
But, I mean, the dude, that guy went straight to the Carolina League for 4 innings, then to the AAA for 6, and then 23 in the big leagues. I mean, Chris Sale was not more polished, I don't believe, than A.J. Puck. I just don't believe. I mean, I know it's different organizations, but I don't believe he's more polished than A.J. Puck.
But again, to me,
he wasn't even the top pitcher drafted that year. He turned out to be, but it was like a 17th.
To me, though, it'll be where does Puck start next year?
Yeah, like, that's a big question.
Because again, if he starts next year in high A, that to me, the fact that he made 10 starts, they were keeping him on a very tight innings limit. He wasn't getting that much work anyway. If you send him to high A to start the year and he's in double A by midseason, that's very much a normal top college pitcher progression. Again, because the White Sox, Carson Fulmer, they also did, but the White Sox was like, okay, Carlos Rodon. The White Sox drafted a college pitcher. That guy's getting, you know, again, I'm still blown away that Birdie didn't make it to the majors this past year.
Stunned.
I lost a bet about that.
I am very stunned.
But with Puck, if Puck now turns around and goes to the Midwest League to start the season, then I'm like, oh, man, this is a really slow path.
But I mean, the thing is, like, Beloit and Vermont and Stockton, all three of those were bad teams. They were all 20 games under 500 or worse. 20, 20, and 21, I'm just looking at it right now. I did not know that off the top of my head. I'm no Will Kimmy. But I'm stunned. I'm just stunned they left him there. That's the thing. So they must really not have been impressed with his debut. And let's be honest with it.
They really were not. I think the stunning thing beyond, I'm sorry to interrupt, Tom, but the stunning thing to note beyond, like, the slider, which, you know, you could attribute to fatigue, was that they were shocked how unathletic he was.
Well, that's no shock. That is who he is.
Right, which is no, exactly, which I was going to say, if you saw him pitch, you knew that. I mean, you knew, like, he looked out of sync a lot, and he had back issues, which, I mean, again, if you were scouting this guy, you know these things already coming in. But I think they were really surprised, like, he didn't move well off the mound, and he's got this head whack that really helps, you know, that doesn't help him keep everything in line. And so, you know, there might be a little breakdown and rebuild thing coming out of spring training for him. I don't know. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little extended spring to full season club in there someplace.
Wow. That would honestly blow me away if they did that. If they think he's that broken delivery-wise.
Maybe.
I just cannot. That would just be – because really, I'm just looking up top left-handers, and it depends on the organization. Again, Carlos Rodon, different because it's the White Sox again. But Brian Mattis, David Price, Andrew Miller, these are all guys in the last decade with the top left-handers out of a draft. College lefties.
Especially in the years that had lefties. Not like the 25th pick is the first lefty off the board.
And all these guys went straight to high A. And
which
this
makes
guy,
sense. He pitched in the SEC for 3 years. High A should not be a step up significantly in competition.
And this guy went to USA Team USA. And this guy was a guy out of high school. He was top 75 or 80 on our top 100 on the BA 500 out of high school.
85
is where he was. So
I have it in front of me, so it's not like I pulled that from my memory.
He only threw 74 innings this year, so it's not like his arm had been overused. That's one of the great things about the University of Florida. It's a guarantee that you won't get overused if you go there. Kevin O'Sullivan has plenty of pitchers, and he uses them all. So that's kind of where I wanted to go, but I didn't know it was honestly that negative. But my sense was they were not impressed by what they got in A.J. Puck.
Yeah.
And it would not shock me if Dalton Jeffries, on my personal board of here's who I like coming into the year, Dalton Jeffries was darn near number one on the college right-handers list. I love Dalton Jeffries. And the crazy thing is he's a fastball changeup righty.
But by the way.
But it's a 7 changeup. He's an athlete.
But when you speak of where the guys go, Dalton Jeffries was in the AZL. Now, admittedly, he was on a very short.
But that's the problem for him is he got banged up. So I understand why he fell where he fell and why they handled him the way they handled him. Because he is a small fry. And that's, unfortunately, his track record of durability is minus. It's a minus track record.
But again, I don't want to make too much of Puck being the New York Penn, because also Logan Shore, who, if AJ Puck is far too advanced for the New York Penn League, Logan Shore is so far more advanced than that. Like, there's concerns you could have with Logan Shore, but pitching in the same rotation and being more of the guy at Florida than Puck ever was.
Pitched 30 more innings than his college roommate.
The reality of it is that Logan Shore, if you just sent Logan Shore to high A last year to end the season, it'd have been like, yeah, this is okay.
Even for an inning or two, and that's the thing, like the Cardinals, this is an organization with a pretty good track record for developing pitchers. And the Cardinals took Dakota Hudson, and they sent him. He finished the year in the AA Texas League bullpen. Like, hey, that's not your long-term role. But we want you to get a little taste of this. And, again, if you're looking for a winning team for Oakland, you had to go to AA because they're high A, low A, short season team, bad. So I'm just a little surprised at how they handled all three of these guys, because I like all three of these guys. And if Dalton Jeffries had been a little healthier, but here's the bad trend on Dalton Jeffries. Innings pitched freshman, 91 and a third. Innings pitched sophomore, 80. Innings pitched junior, 50. Not a good trend. So I love Dalton Jeffries. I'm all about him. Where they got him, great value. So I kind of like their draft. I like the first four college guys they took. But all those guys, and Sean Murphy has had a little... just consistent health issues with MRSA in the summer. But you really like Sean Murphy. It sounds like they really like Sean Murphy.
Oh, man, they were over the moon about Sean Murphy. And I think, like, first iteration, as you mentioned, we had him in the top 10. So, one guy said, put a 90 on his arm and was talking about, young Pudge in terms of arm strength.
Which is just crazy. I'm sorry. That's just crazy. It's crazy. That's crazy. I don't know how
those things go.
That's the thing. I do, but I don't. That is crazy. I've seen the guy throw. The ball does not come out like that. So I don't know what the hell is going on there. I really don't. That quote in your notes exasperates me to no end, because it's like, first of all, why are we making a comp to a guy who doesn't play anymore? Has this guy ever seen Yadi Molina with his 1-7 second base?
Right.
Second of all, Sean Murphy, I've seen it. I watched it. It's a good arm. It's not even the best one that came out this year, JJ. That was Jake Rogers. It just was. We asked a lot of guys about it. So that's an exasperating quote. Exasperating.
Yeah, I think hyperbole is sometimes possible during these calls. You talk to a guy who's like really crazy high about a guy, and that happens.
Not like that. That's what I'm saying. That's comping a guy to a Hall of Famer. I don't get that.
Right.
I don't get that. That does the player a disservice. So the person who made that comparison should know that. I don't get that. I rarely get the comps anymore. Like, oh, man, that's Maddox-esque. That doesn't happen.
Right.
The one time I got that, that I actually ran with it, guess what? It actually was true. It was about Buster Posey. Just like Greg Maddox is going to be in the Hall of Fame. Throwing that gauntlet in.
At the time,
he was staying as a pitcher, yes.
Yes. And he's not going to be a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Correct. But he had the little... Anyway. But yes. But they love Sean Murphy.
I think they love... I think John Bench came up as well in that conversation. So just if you wanted to feel more ill at ease about that. But I didn't mention Johnny Bench in there, because that's just... To me, that would have been crazy.
I will argue, and you can say what you want about performance-enhancing drugs, and I'm not trying to take us down a tangent, but if you lined up Pudge Rodriguez's career and Johnny Bench's, I don't know.
I'm taking Johnny Bench.
I think that's a good discussion.
Yeah.
And longevity and consistency of production, I would say, goes to Pudge.
Yeah, there's a reason for that.
There may be.
But peak, the peak isn't too close. Johnny Bench peak is
I'll give you that.
A lot better.
But
ridiculous.
But we have gone for over 50 minutes.
It's like the Twins podcast. So I was feeling it on both.
John's fired up. He's been out of the office and he's fired up.
Well, the last question, Vince, who's the Roy White in this organization? Because we've touched all your 70s faves. Who's the A's Roy White, or do they not have one?
Jacob Brugman, I'll say, just because I want to mention Jacob Brugman. And because I love the Roy White stuff. Another guy who the A's people people were sure to mention to me and make sure to get him in here. Fundamental guy who they really love. Ceiling is probably not very high, but they're all about Jacob Brugman.
So he's not Roy White, but we did mention Roy White. So he hit all your touchstones, yes, which I appreciated. So.
Correct.
All right. Well, good stuff there. Good stuff, Vince. It is interesting for instance of JJ, but I just think they have so many guys who could go one way or the other. They really, they don't have a lot of sure things, and just I think it's telling that they really didn't like AJ Puck. It's like the guy who everybody liked last summer, and everyone's like, "You want him? Nah, I don't want him. You take him. Nah, you take him."
But the thing about it is that, and I always go back to this. There is a to me, one of the things that does jump out with that is we always see, and sometimes it's useful, and sometimes it's not. But we always see one of the fascinating things is when you get guys go from the amateur side to the pro side. And essentially what happens is there's some overlap, but you get a whole different group of guys who are putting eyes on them.
It just sounds like, honestly, it sounds like when you were getting early reports on Mark Appel.
Those Mark sounds exactly like that's it. Exactly what it's like, where it was like the pro guys saw him
this
and they're
guy?
Like, and they were, it was like, that's 1-1, that's not 1-1. Yeah. And they were adamant about it, and that was like within the first 20 innings that he'd thrown as a pro.
It was early.
And again, but AJ Puck was, now it was not a great, we've had back-to-back drafts where it's not like you have, usually when you were rolling out through these, the Carlos Rodons, the David Prices and all that, AJ Puck, I mean, we should make it clear, this was one where he was at the top of boards as far as college pitchers in this class. But there was, much as it was when we had the, you know, not that long ago with the Dylan Tate, Carson Fulmer year, where it's like, let's make something clear. This is not...
It was not the 2017 college draft class, which is why you're going to hear this draft get talked about. This upcoming draft get talked about as a really good draft because the college pitching offers a cornucopia of delights.
Again, you go back to it. The reality of it is that AJ Puck was considered probably the best college arm in this class in many ways. And at the same time... He was not just not the guy at Florida. He wasn't the second option.
Yeah.
And you could argue he wasn't the third option, and everyone understood that. And that's like, I mean, the best way to put it is that...
He won two games. I know wins are wins, but he was on a really good college baseball team that went to Omaha, and he couldn't pitch five innings enough times to get more than two wins.
But not only that... But when they got to Omaha, he wasn't the guy they wanted on the mound.
Yeah, he threw one pitch, donked the guy in the head, and they took him out. That's it. That was the extent of his
career. Again, when you talk about Logan Shore, Logan Shore was the guy they wanted on the mound. Alex Thedo, who will be in the 2017 draft, they wanted on the mound.
It was a pretty iffy college pitcher year all the way around. And so 2017, we definitely hope is better than 2016 was. And I think Oakland A's fans hope that 2017 is better than 2016 was, but I'm not sure it's going to be so. Thanks, Vince. Good stuff from you. Appreciate that. And appreciate you, JJ Cooper. And we'll just take it out. So we'll be back next week with more podcasts, maybe even a weekend Astros podcast, you're saying, JJ?
That's fine. If
we can find someone to talk to JJ, then we'll do that.
The JJ monologue. JJ on the Astros. Hey, on Twitter, someone suggested that, you know, hey, JJ, you should just do a 24-hour Braves one. You know, it's that deep. You know, and it's like, just do it like a telephone. And you know, like, they suggested rotating hosts, and Teddy pointed out, no, JJ's do the whole thing. And I'm like, yeah, probably would.
I think that probably could happen. So until then, for JJ Cooper and Vince Lara, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you in the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.